From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, that was interesting. The radio machine was playing silly buggers.
Sure was. Do you want me to keep going?
No, I think we've had enough.
Okay, good.
So welcome. It's Thursday evening. That means you've got myself, Mark.
And myself, Garth, and not himself, Leon, because A, he either can't be bothered to turn up.
Yes.
B, right. He's working. Or C, he is furiously packing his bags because he is almost on his way to the US of A.
For one of those WrestleMania type things.
Look, he likes watching people in spandex.
Okay,
and
fair enough.
I don't judge because anyone who knows what they're happy watching is completely fine with me.
Well, look, we're all inclusive here at the Dice Men Cometh.
Absolutely.
Here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, live in the Hobart studios, going out over the podcast airways. We've got another fantastic show of talking all about games. We're going to be talking about one of the games we've been playing lately. We're going to be talking about what's happening on Kickstarter. There's a lot happening there in the realm of tabletop games. But be remiss of us not to give a shout-out or the fact that our thoughts are with our friends across the pond in New Zealand. Obviously, there's been a horrible, horrible incident there. I don't think it's appropriate for us to go into too many details, apart from the fact that, look, people be nice to each other.
Yeah,
really.
Absolutely.
You know, Will Wheaton did a lot for the tabletop hobby. Then he did some funny stuff that was interesting. But one thing that will always stick to me about Will Wheaton is his golden rule was, language warning, don't be a dick.
And look, what I love for the most part about this hobby is how inclusive it is. And we can sit around a table and it doesn't matter. If you're sitting at that table, it's equal.
Yeah, it doesn't matter your colour, your race, your sex or gender, your religion. We're all just people playing games trying to smash the crap out of each other if we're playing a competitive game or all work together.
Yes.
If
or
it's a cooperative game.
If you're playing against Mark, you're playing against Mark.
Anyway, our thoughts are with you, Christchurch.
Absolutely.
And New Zealand. And I've seen the poll online where the preferred Australian Prime Minister, it was 5% for Morrison, 5% for Shorten, and 90% for Jacinda Ardern. Yeah, look, she's just done an amazing job in such difficult circumstances. So hats off to her. And our thoughts do go across the pond to anyone who's affected by that. We really are with
absolutely,
you. 100%. And hopefully we're going to talk about some rubbish that will be distracting to take you away from thinking about the real world for a while. Some fun and particularly some games.
Woohoo!
And after this break, we'll be back to start that conversation.
Absolutely. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's episode 254.
Yes.
So thank you to anyone who is listening for the 254th time, all the way to the first time. We appreciate every ear, or indeed set of ears, that is listening.
I'm always fascinated to actually look at the stats on our website that tells me who's listening to what. And it's so funny because you see people listening to the latest episode, the latest 2, 3, 4, 5 episodes, and then you'll see somewhere perched in there someone listening to episode 78 or episode 123 or something like that. So it's great to see new people coming on board, catching up with the old episodes. You can certainly listen back and see. We've learned a lot over the years. Clearly not how to drive the radio technology and get our theme song to play.
No, but the two key things you've learned, and I'm talking about you being Mark Rickard,
yes,
is that you've managed to get rid of Trent. That's a good learning. And anyone who is a previous listener from a long time ago, go back and listen. And you've managed to pick up myself and Leon.
Yes.
Because I believe I was the third Dice Man who started after episode 50. And Leon, we just keep him around because he provides us with chocolate.
Yes,
right?
And he only really pops in every now and again anyway, so he's not too much of a bother.
So we are very proud and very happy to be here and filling up your airwaves for the moment. But we will throw to a song and then we're going to come back and talk about a game that we have been playing lately. So again, you are with the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM and here is your song.
I'm Matthew Lee from The Campaigner and I listen to the world's best podcast. And I also listen to the Dice Men Cometh.
Well, there you go. That was Beaumont Plagey or something like that, because they're actually not a French band. They're a Swedish band, but they certainly sound French, with Isolé, sort of a housey, funky track there.
It was okay.
It was okay. Here with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And before we move on to what we've been playing, Garth, I want to remind the listeners they only have 1 week left. Is it 1 week?
As they say in the funny pages, the clock is ticking.
That's right. To enter our BorderCon competition. Now, for those who came in late, BorderCon is, in our terms, the best board gaming convention in Australia, because it is about 250 people playing board games solid for up to 4 days at a lovely little spot, Albury on the border there. It's just friends and people playing games non-stop for up to 4 days, depending on how early you get there and how late you leave. It's so much fun. I mean, if you've listened to this show at all past the last 10 episodes, we talk about it so much.
We sure do. And the reason we talk about it is because it is amazing. From a logistical point of view, you can fly to Sydney if you don't live in Sydney and drive down. You can fly to Melbourne if you don't live to Melbourne and drive up. You can do what we do when we live in Tasmania and fly to Melbourne and then drive up, or you can catch a train. Or, indeed, you can fly to Albury. There is an airport there.
Yep.
So it's very easily accessible for any Australian on any coast, or indeed regional capital city, normal city, anywhere within driving range of hoo-ha or woo-hoo.
Well, really, I think for anyone in the ACT, anyone in New South Wales and anyone in Victoria, there is no excuse. It's readily accessible. I mean, we've got to hike across major water, stay a night, pick up a car, you know, we go to a tremendous effort to get there.
It's not about us, Mark.
But it's so worth it.
The point is, if you want to just spend...
Oh, did we mention it's sold out? So, sorry, you can't come. Unless...
Unless you win.
Unless you win our competition.
And the thing is, it is amazing because I can almost vouch for every single person there, and they're almost all amazing human beings.
Oh, yes.
And the ones that I don't know are human beings that are amazing is because I haven't had the pleasure of meeting them yet. Or playing a game with them yet, and that's amazing. So look, if you do want to enter our BorderCon competition, which does finish in a week's time, which is the end of March 2019, please, please, please jump onto your computer or indeed walk over to it and send us an email or send us a tweet, or send us an Instagram or post something on our Facebook page or even PM us on Facebook, which means private messaging, and all you need to do is tell us what game would you like to play with the Dice Men, and then you might win, and then you get to live out that fantasy.
And if you're holding off thinking, oh, I need to make a multimedia extravaganza to impress the Dice Men to win, well, that would help possibly, but we're going to evaluate every entry on its merits.
Absolutely.
On the game, on the reason you want to go, on how much money you send us in an envelope. No, not at all. But don't be held off by the fact that you think, oh, well, I can't make a fancy video, I'm never going to win. You would be surprised. Just because the entry that won last year was a video entry, you would be surprised who can win that. We are open to all comers. We really want to share this con with as many people as we can, particularly with two people who win this competition.
Absolutely. So an example of an entry could be, hello, Dice Man, I want to play you at Monopoly because I want to see you suffer through Monopoly. Ha, ha, ha. Signed, Board Gamer.
Don't say that. If you say you want to play us at Monopoly... Oh, you could win, I guess. There's a chance.
Absolutely.
But anyway, we want to hear from you. There's still time. You've got till the end of March to get your entry in. DiceMenCometh@gmail.com, @DiceMenCometh on Twitter, @DiceMenCometh on Instagram. You've got the Facebook page called The Dice Men Cometh, or facebook.com/DiceMenCometh. You've got our website. There's multiple ways to find us. I'm sure you can work it out.
And for the 45 people who are amazingly booked on the board game cruise that I have the privilege of organising, just send me an email to my work email address and I'll enter you. I don't care. We just want more entries in here because we've got heaps, but the more the better.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we want to share the BorderCon love.
All right, now, Garth, the other thing that we love to share is what games we have been playing lately. Now,
yes.
Firstly, and I don't, did we mention it in the opening round? I don't think we did. The fact that Edge Radio was broken last Thursday. And so you and I were sitting in New Sydney, our friendly local pub, having a beer, about to leave to come down to the studio and do our show, when we got a message saying, it's not working.
Emergency, emergency, your radio station has capitulated.
Yep, and it was broken, and we didn't get to do the episode last week. So we've missed a week. We missed you all, but we're back again. And so this game that we're going to tell you about last week, we're going to tell you about this week.
Absolutely.
And Garth?
What?
What is that game?
That game is Crisusasus. It is Crusaders, Though We'll Be Done. Now, this is a game by TMG, or Tasty Minstrel Games, designed by Seth Jaffe. Art by Adam P. McIver. And look, we do have to tip our hats to TMG.
Oh, they're good to us.
Because they did send this to us. And we do have to say thanks to, is it Lance, the Undead Viking, who is their promotional media person, who was kind enough to go, hey, guys, would you like a copy? And we went, hey, Lance, absolutely we would like a copy and we will play it quickly and we will talk about it. And indeed we are. So in this game, you, and by you I mean 2 to 4 players, will be playing knights, all working kind of together, but really not together.
Yep.
As you try and spread the influence over Western Europe of your particular version of crusading.
And look, because we spoke at the start of the show about Christchurch and everything that has happened there, let's get out early and say this is not very thematic.
Absolutely not.
And if you're not happy about the subject matter of fanatical Christians pushing their religion onto non-Christians, let's just say it doesn't feature in this game whatsoever. The map is quite abstracted.
And the designer goes out of their way to say this is not a true representation of what happened in the Crusades. It is very much an abstraction. And, look, it's a game. It's not a GMT heavy, we're going to recreate history. This is a
TMG light.
I know, 45 to 60 minute game that actually delivers on that time frame. And any long-term listener will know that for me personally, finding a game that delivers on a whole bunch of things within an hour is awesome.
And so often we look at the playtime and then we say, yeah, but it's the Diceman Cometh playing this game, so double it at least.
Correct.
And maybe add a bit for a learning game.
We have to play the mark tax.
Not in this.
Mm. So, look, what are you doing in this game? Well, look, this game is 2 to 4 players, and, look, anyone can jump onto BGG and take a look at the map, and you go, wow, that's a Euro game. No, it's not. It's a race game, and it is 100% a race game because, very interestingly, in this game, you are playing until you run out of victory points. And in a 4-player game, you are running out of victory points at 260, which is all the victory points you will find in this game. At a 3-player game, you'll pay for less. You can also play it with 2 and you'll play for less again. And there is a double-sided board that will highlight quite appropriately how many victory points you are indeed playing for. So get it out of your head. This is not a Euro.
And if you have a, let's for want of a better word, call him a Leon in your group who sees that slightly obvious strategy of, but what if I just get victory points? It might even go quicker.
Yes. They'll come last. But anyway, we will talk about that potentially down the track. So look, in this game, 2 to 4 players are going to be fighting their way through Europe, but also constructing their way through Europe and developing their own kind of engine throughout Europe over the space 45 to 60 minutes. There is a central player board where you'll all start in a spot with nothing more than a knight, one of your characters, and you will be able to have up to 3 knights, potentially 4 if you get the right character. And all you're going to be trying to do is on every single turn, maximise the amount of victory points you will get every single turn, because it is a race game. And I'm going to say that a lot because it very much is.
This is so much a Euro race game, though, because it feels like a Euro game, even though you're hurrying through it.
Correct. So the heart of this game is all in your player boards. So at the start of the game, there are four player boards. You'll dish them out, and the only difference at the initial setup is the colour.
Mm.
So Mark will have green.
Of course.
And then you get to the very first interesting amount of decisions, because in this game, there is a whole stack of knights that you're going to be choosing, and each player is going to be dealt out two of those, and they will give you a starting or a continual game ability, but they're also going to tell you something about the next phase, which is the rondel side of this game.
And there's a lot of variety. There's a lot of variety in those knights, which I really like, and something that I guess when you first play it, you look and you go, that would be really good, or actually, I don't know which of these is good. It's quite an interesting decision right from the start.
Exactly, and we're not talking about this chronologically. We're not talking about this from this is exactly how you set up the game, because who cares about that, hey? I'm just going to highlight the important points. You're going to get given a couple of knights, and you're going to have to choose the right one. Now, the most important part of the whole setup is that randomly one player is going to have to shuffle up and randomly determine the six wedges that will make up your rondel, and they'll set it up. Then every other player is going to set that up in the same direction. And the way you do that is because each of the rondel's tiles that you have will have one of the available five actions that you can do. Now, there's six tiles but five actions, and the reason for that is that two of the tiles have the same action, which is travel. So you set up that. You'll get your knights, and you'll choose, what type of knight am I going to be? And it will give you a special ability. And the special ability will be fast and far-ranging. And you can explore that and discover that when you play. But what it will also tell you is how many little tokens you'll be able to put on your rondel. And the bulk standard is 12. It's two per tile.
And are they called influence?
No, influence is victory points.
Oh, no, that's right. They've got a special name, haven't they?
Yeah, and I'll look at that for you.
Anyway, it's very much with your rondel, you use those tokens in a kind of a Mancala mechanic where you activate a wedge and you don't have to go round in order. You just pick whatever wedge it is you want, which is the action you want to do. You activate that wedge, and then you pick, and you get to do. Oh, sorry, I'm stealing your thunder, Garth.
That's all right.
You take over.
I think you've just seen why Mark doesn't explain games. So you set it up, you take your knight, you do your thing, and you're going to start. And you'll also have a whole bunch of buildings. You'll have churches, you'll have farms or barns, and you'll have banks.
Wedges just remind me of pies and pizzas and things which get me a bit carried away.
So. Another reason Mark doesn't explain.
Yeah, that's right.
So you set up your player board, you set up the stuff, and away you go. So the way this game is going to work is, as Mark says, on every player's turn, you're going to choose one of the wedges and you're going to start the Mancala mechanic. You're going to pick up all of those little tokens on your wedge, and that is the amount of actions you can do. So if I have two tokens on my travel, for example, action, that allows me to have two actions worth of
travel. 2 points of travel, yeah.
Which is incredibly important. So before we get to why that's important, what are the actions you can do? Well, look, you can travel. And the reason you want to do that is because your knights are going to be gallivanting throughout Europe, wanting to go from space to space to space to space to space, because whenever you move, you'll also then have the opportunity to do other stuff. For example, Mark, you could choose to crusade, i.e. fight. And in this case, the abstraction is you are fighting Saracens or Prussians or Slavs. Slavs?
Yes, people Slavic. From the former European...
Correct.
Yugoslavian areas of Europe.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And this is where they will each give you a certain number of victory points should you choose to defeat them. But if you're going to fight against the Saracens, they may give you a benefit depending on the way you choose to fight them. And that's important The reason that's important is because one of the actions you can also choose to do is, if you're an empty hex, is build a new building from your player board. Mm-hmm. You can build a bank, you can build a barn, or you can build a farm. And you can basically build your economy up that way, because each of those buildings that you will build will allow you to slowly get your economy to be better, or to slowly make each individual action you do be stronger.
It reminded me, the player board reminded me a bit of Kingsburg, in that you've got various levels of building, and those levels will make your other abilities more powerful, or give you an extra action, or give you an extra army point or whatever. But you have that sort of slow build up, and you can make that decision of specializing or just upgrading as much as you can.
Yep.
But it reminded me a little bit of Scythe, in that you've got those upgrades, but very much Kingsburg, in that, well, this is a level one and a level two and a level three, and things grow and get stronger.
That's right. And you can build up to four of each building type, and the bonuses that go along with those. Look, if you build the fourth of any one building, that is all about end of game score.
Yeah, end game bonus.
And that's fair enough. I can guarantee you won't build all four of those. No. Because this game goes so quickly. So look, you can build stuff, you can move, you can fight things. Or you can choose to muster, which allows you to hopefully make your armies a little bit stronger, because, yeah, you've got a knight, and knights, they're really impressive. But you've also got a whole bunch of foot soldiers, 1 through to 5, that you can upgrade with. And that will allow you to fight the Slavs or the Prussians or the Saracens and just do a little bit more smackdown as you make your way throughout Europe. Or you can do the Leon move, which is called influence. And what that means is that you will do nothing except gain influence with your VPs, but doesn't improve your engine.
But hey, VPs win you the game, so if you can get enough of them.
Yeah, they do. Leon didn't win, though, did he?
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
But interestingly, back to the muster, which sort of fascinated me a bit at the start, because you look at the board and you go, oh, but hang on, I only need 3 fighting strength, 3 crusade strength to defeat my first Slav or Prussian. I need 6 to defeat a Saracen. And as we said, the number of those action markers you've got on the rondelle, that's how many points of
strength
you
in
have.
In this case, yeah.
So you look and go, hang on, the Saracens, they're always 6. The Slavs and Prussians, they start at 3, but they can go up to
10.
I don't even know how far the board goes, because each time you attack them, you move a little marker up and they get one stronger. How do I do that? And then with that muster action, you've got these 5 or 6 little tokens on the top of your playboard that fit nicely. When you muster, you flip one over, which means you get to add 1 extra point of attack power. And then also some of your buildings give you extra attack power. Some of the spaces you land on the board, those travel points, will give you negatives. So in other words, it costs you less to attack. And you see that little puzzle of, oh, I want to go all the way over there to that spot because that will let me build a bank for 2 less. But in order to do that, I'm going to have to fight my way through maybe 3 lots of Prussians to get there. So I'm going to need 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 7. How do I get 7? Oh, I'm going to have to muster and do that. And then I'm going to build a building. That's going to let me do a bit more mustering. It's a very much interlocking puzzle.
Yes, or as they call it, a game.
Yes.
So this game, which I love, I really like this game, encourages the player to really think about the strategy that you're going to make, and really encourages and most importantly rewards the player who optimizes every single turn.
Mm.
When you start this game and there's 4 of you sitting around a table and you go, hey, table, we're playing to 260 victory points. And then once they're taken, we're going to play 1 more round so that everyone's had enough turns so that it's equal. Everyone goes, 260 victory points? That's a lot.
That's right. And you look, okay, well, maybe I'll take the influence action a few times and just get pure victory points. Oh, because of my starting setup, I'll get 2. or maybe three if I'm really lucky. Or if I'm amazing lucky, maybe I'll, at the start, I might get four. And you think, that's a lot of turns.
Yeah. And then you very quickly realise that on your turn, you only ever have this small amount of tokens that you're able to move, and they're never going to increase. They're never going to decrease. So whatever you start the game with, you're only ever going to have that potentially 12 tokens,
yep.
maybe 11, maybe up to 14 tokens, depending on the knight that you have started with. Doing an influence turn where you get nothing but influence, it's not the way to go. Because the way that this game works in our couple of plays is that it hasn't been a relatively even split of the 260 victory points. It's been, you know, there's been a decent first player and then second player, and then there's been a bit of a daylight and what have you. But what I love is that, yes, you can choose to do an action. You can choose to move, you can choose to master, you can choose to crusade and da-da-da-da-da. Or what you can choose to do is take one of your wedges and flip it over and basically make it a super wedge, which doesn't just have one action on it, it has two. So you then have a wedge that isn't just a muster, it is a muster plus influence.
But
or
Garth,
it is a move plus crusade.
So, Garth, the obvious thing then is, well, why wouldn't I just, for my first six turns, just upgrade all my wedges? I mean, isn't that obvious?
No, it's not obvious. And when I was looking at this game going, Mark's just going to do that. He's just going to spend his first six actions going, upgrade, 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 upgrade. The reason it's not a good strategy is because the game's not long enough. You need to earn influence every single turn that you make, or you need to be growing your engine so that the next turn, or maybe two turns away at most, you can do a turn that will suck all those victory points back to you, because you need to earn not only influence, but you need to earn some engine building every single turn. You need to build a building. You need to conquer someone. You need to improve your standing, because as the game progresses, fighting things become harder. Buildings become more expensive. You can't afford to jump into that part of the game when you're halfway through.
Yeah, and it's going to be tougher to defeat an enemy to get into that spot where you want to build. It's going to cost you more to move through enemies, because it costs you a little bit extra to move through if you don't want to defeat them. And you're going to be racing for those attractive spots that are way across in Eastern Europe, and you're starting in Western Europe, so you need to move. But the other thing that I found quite fascinating about why you don't just necessarily upgrade is, yeah, sure, you flip it over and like, well, I can move and crusade on the same move, but I've only got the same amount of markers. So if I've got two or three markers, well, that's great. If I've got three there, maybe I can do a three crusade. But if I want to move and crusade, well, then all of a sudden I've got to split the markers if I want to do both. I could still just do a three crusade and choose not to use the travel part, for example. But if I want to travel two to get to a spot to crusade, well, then that just leaves me one strength left of crusade. So it's not like, oh, great, super strong action on the other side. It's actually, it's almost weaker. Yes, you get a choice, because you could do one or the other or both, but you've still got the limited amount of actions. And that is part of the amazing little puzzle in this game is, it's partly about, okay, what am I doing now to maximize this move? But then it's about, where am I going to put my little markers? And you might think, well, it's Mancala. I'm going to put one, then one, then one, then one. But so many of the special actions that the different knights give you are just subtle little variations. So it could be, well, you can place your markers clockwise or anti-clockwise. Or you can put two of them on one wedge as you go around,
which is huge.
Or a number of different variations on that similar thing, because what you're trying to do is set up that next move, or even the two moves, or even the three moves away. Now, when I say that, don't get me wrong. This is not a deep, deep, deep strategy game where you have to think five moves in advance. But you do need to look and go, okay, I can build. I need to get a stronger army, otherwise I'm not going to defeat these guys. So I'm going to have to muster. And then I'm going to crusade. But then if I go to that spot, I can muster cheaper, or I can build a building that gives me extra muster. And then you start to see, okay, so that means I need to get more tokens on that particular wedge. How do I do that? And this puzzle starts to gunk, 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 like the gears start to mesh, your brain starts to spin, and you start to, as Garth said, look at, okay, well, what's the best I can do on this turn, but that will set me up for the next turn and maybe set me up for two more turns. And the beauty is, you don't need to go, so you need to go around the wedges when you're mancalaring your little influence tokens, but you don't need to go, okay, so I'm traveling, then the next wedge around is I'm crusading. You can pick the one behind it. You can pick one the same again, except it probably not going to have any markers on it if you've just used it. That way of how you jump from one side of the board to the other, and it was quite fascinating to look at everyone's board, and you could almost see, wow, all the markers are all on one side, as you sort of, we had worked out which were the more valuable actions the later and later the game went.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also love the fact there's no hidden information. I can look at your player board and go, okay, I can see where everything is.
Yeah.
And I can probably guess what you're going to do.
Yep.
And I love that. And what I also love for this kind of game is that there is just the right amount of interaction. The interaction is pretty much if I steal an area before you intend on going into it. Because if I steal an area, you can't necessarily go in there and build something. You might, but the chances are you're not going to be able to, because it's going to have thrown out of whack your particular strategy. So there's never going to be a situation where you completely destroy another player's turn. They will always be able to do something good.
Yeah.
But you can certainly limit their ability to do a thing that may get them buku victory points.
And if you
which
don't,
is important.
If you don't combine your actions well, you might find you go in and crusade against those nasty Prussians, thinking that, okay, next time I'm going to build that building that's going to let me muster much better or build another building. And then someone, because you haven't looked at your actions and looked what your other players are doing, they come in and actually build it while you are there.
Exactly.
Sneaky
so,
buggers.
So, look, I'm surprised that Mark hasn't talked about the art. I personally don't think that the board itself is a very attractive board. I don't like this orangey hue that it's got. I like the art on the character cards, the various knights. But when I set this up the first time, just to have a look at it, just to make sure, yeah, I understood and everything was there, I went, I don't like this white hexes and sunburnt orange thing.
Yeah.
So I love that it looks better from my perspective as the game progresses.
Yeah, it gets a lot more colourful. Oh, look, I do like the wooden meeple-y buildings you've got. So you've got your castles, and you've got your banks, and you've got your farms, and they're all different shaped little wooden buildings. They're nice and big and chunky. They're easy to see, so that makes it easy. You've got your knights, which are very traditionally look sort of like people on horses.
Correct.
But then all the pieces are nice, chunky wooden meeples, which is great in a Euro style. The colours are bright. The player colours are nice and bright. You've got a purple in there, which is nice, and orange. You don't see them very often.
No.
Look, I agree. The board is very, very utilitarian. Like, you can see everything on there. It's not super attractive.
That's functional.
But it doesn't really detract from the game. Exactly. It's functional. Look, at first glance, I was annoyed that the setup of the armies you're attacking was random, because, of course, I was like, well, the Prussians should be where the Prussians were, and the Slavs should be where the Slavs were, and the Saracens should be where the Saracens were. But if you had to do that, this game would be a GMT game and not a TMG game.
Correct.
And it would take you hours. So it is quite abstracted. The fact that it plays so quickly, the fact that it gives you lots of interesting decisions, and you have to think, in quite quick time, but the game itself doesn't drag. There are not many games out there that do that. I mean, I guess a classic you could turn to is, say, Scythe,
sure,
where, as we laugh about a lot, the game tells you it takes 115 minutes, and
yeah,
that's pretty close. Not that this is a Scythe-like game, but that game doesn't take long to play. this gives you the same sort of feeling, but it's even quicker, but it's very satisfying, I found.
This game is remarkably satisfying, and that's why I like it. It is short, it is sharp. Every single decision you make is incredibly important, and if it's at BorderCon, I'm going to play it again because I will happily dedicate an hour to that game. So I'm really looking forward to playing it again because I just want to try a different night. I just want to try a different strategy. The randomization on the board is great, and I love it, except I don't think it's the most attractive board game in the world. Anyway, that is Crusaders Thy Will Be Done by TMG, designed by Seth Jaffe. We are the Dice Men Cometh, and we will be back with Mark spending all of our money with Kickstarter.
Yep.
Throw us to a song.
Oh, I love this song. Excuse me, everyone. Just wanted to pop in and say hello. It's Mark here, and welcome all the new listeners. What I'd love for you all to do, if you haven't done it before, is jump onto iTunes and leave us a review. 5 stars would be awesome, but whatever you think we're worth, it makes a big difference to helping us get the podcast out to all the people there who don't know about it already. Of course, we'd love you to support us on Patreon as well, and to share the love on all your social media feeds. But if you could do the iTunes review for us, that would be absolutely amazing. Anyway, back to the track.
Well, there you go. That was the Kaiser Chiefs with Everything Is Average Nowadays.
Not Crusaders, though.
No.
Your mic skills clearly are average. My mic skills are quite average.
Anywho, you with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, Mark.
Yes, Garth.
What are you talking about?
Love kick starts again. Starts again.
Oh, yeah, baby.
So here we go for Mark's semi-regular but always on time Kickstarter update.
That's right. And look, this week a little bit different. I'll just leave that in the background there because that's quite nice. Because I'd prepared some of this last week and then we didn't get to do the show, I actually got to check out some Kickstarters that have now finished or are very close to finish, but I wanted to give a couple of them a shout-out because there are a few Australian Kickstarters out there that are just finishing or still going. The first one, Grey Cells. It's a role-playing game, a streamlined mystery tabletop role-playing game by Bogdan Constantinescu from Sydney. It's his first time creating a game.
That's exciting.
Or at least it's publicly available. And he raised over $9,000. He only had a goal of $1,500. Now, it's still actually just going, but for most people who are listening to this Kickstarter, it'll be finished by the time you listen. You can get a PDF copy of this role-playing game for $3.
Bargain.
Or $15 for a printed copy, and that includes 83 pages of content.
That's cheap.
It's basically a crime RPG. You play policemen or detectives or reporters or scientists or socialites or criminals, all in the crime fiction genre.
So is he just going to go and print off copies at his local library or something?
No. So it's available, obviously, PDF sending it out, or hard copy.
Yeah, but would you say $15 for a copy?
Yeah. Anyway, it's for those who want to check it out, it'll still be floating around there,
That's good. All right,
but it's
awesome.
Great. Congratulations also to the Fool's Haven Adventure Pack. It's a darkly comedic RPG setting, and it was part of the Zine Kickstarter Zine Quest. Now, interestingly with this was Ian Neville. He created the Tinderbox setting that is in the Brigade board games.
Yep.
And then Red Genie Games helped him put this Kickstarter together, where it's a set of supplements and handouts to run role-playing adventures in the darkly comedic urban fantasy setting of Fool's Haven. Now, you can't back this because it finishes tomorrow, which for podcasting people is at least 2 or 3 days ago. But I just wanted to give a shout-out. Another great little Australian company, Red Genie Games, had a big hit with the Brigade, and they're doing something a little bit different with this role-playing RPG zine. Again, they raised over $1,500. They're only after $1,000. Again, you can do PDF and hard copy. Are you sensing a theme here? Congratulations also to our friends across the pond. at with Shem Phillips and Sam McDonald for Garfield Game, Art Again by the Miko. That was, of course, Paladins of the West Kingdom. Again, it is either just wrapping up or just about to wrap up. By the time you listen to this, it will have wrapped up. They raised over $730,000 for this second of the three games in the West Kingdom series. Apparently, this is about the heaviest of these games and also the North Sea games. Sam McDonald, I think, did most of the work, and he also recently did the Circadians, which we talked about a while ago.
Yeah.
It also raised $140,000. So congratulations to Garfield Games again. We'll be looking forward to seeing that one. Another one that's just about to wrap up, Age of Steam, the Deluxe Edition. Now, you might say, what's Australian about this? Well, firstly, the designer of this board game, Martin Wallace, used to live in the UK.
I didn't see his name on the project.
Then moved to New Zealand. Now he lives in Australia. Not only did he design the original Age of Steam, but the art in this game is by fantastic artist and friend of the show, Ian O'Toole. Now, Garth, funny you should mention that. There was a bit of controversy.
Oh, really?
Okay. And indeed controversy about this game when it first came out on Kickstarter, because it didn't have Martin Wallace's name.
No,
anywhere.
It didn't. I'm pretty sure that.
And, you know, when I researched this last week, when I was getting ready for last week's show, of course, I was like, I better jump on Board Game Geek. Oh, my goodness. Opened a can of worms there. There were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of Board Game Geek devoted to this and to previous discussions of what had happened with Age of Steam. I'm not going to go into any of that now. Needless to say, whatever it was resolved.
Oh, really? That's
between awesome. Eagle Griffin Games and Martin Wallace. And so now Martin can be publicly acknowledged as the creator of this game, and all those people that were like, this game looks gorgeous, Ian O'Toole is amazing, but, you know, if the designer of the game is not getting any credit for designing the game, I really don't know if I'm going to back it. The great news is, for those people, that was sorted out. So congratulations to Eagle Griffin and Martin for coming together and sorting that out. It is a lovely looking game.
Oh, look, if you like train games, then good luck to you.
Oh, look, I have to admit, I still prefer the Railways of the World Railroad Tycoon, just for the look of it.
But in terms of, for this Kickstarter, I think in Australian dollars, getting the full version is $140, $150, something like that. But you get 10 maps.
Yeah, it's quite amazing.
So you get a huge amount of replayability. You've got the option to buy some beautiful little train wooden meeples should you choose to go down that path. And look, personally, I am really glad that they have been able to come to some resolution, because I truly believe Martin should be getting credited with the game he designed.
Yeah.
Which seems like a weird thing to say, but that's the world of publishing that is way beyond our pay grade.
Anyway, that's a fascinating little thing that happened during the week. Look, it's not all good news, unfortunately. We want to send our commiserations to a Hobart man, Matey Pritchard, with his game Good Interesting Fun Times. It's just about to finish again. I think it might have one day to go as we're recording this. It'll be finished by the time the podcast came. It was a fun little sort of party/word game. And unfortunately, he only got about 2,000 of the 14,000 he was after. But I'm sure, like every good board game designer, he'll come back better and stronger and faster.
Well, we certainly know he's got a couple of other games up his sleeve. And look, Gift or Good Interesting Fun Times was indeed that. But it didn't quite sort of get through to the Kickstarter market, and hopefully it's big and back and better.
We'll see what happens to the future, and good luck with that, matey. One little exciting game. Now, look, the funny thing is, I've mentioned all those Australian connections. I'm only just starting on the Australian games on Kickstarter because Keith D. Franks, some of you might remember him. He had a little game called Castles of Calera that he funded on Kickstarter a while ago. That was one of the, let's call it a micro card game, where it had 18 cards. Well, surprise, surprise, he's got another one up his sleeve. It's called Spirits of Carter Mansion, and this is a haunted house social deduction game where players are the spirits that haunt the mansion. Now, the neighbour's child has kicked their soccer ball in through the upstairs window and upset all of the spirits in the house unrest. Now, the more compassionate spirits among us want to help the child to get their ball back. But the more evil spirits want to lure the child to the basement and have it be never seen again. It's... Just bring the stats up, Garth, because when I checked this, it was over 33% funded. It's probably a little bit more than that now. It's got 11 days to go. It's only $25, including shipping, which is quite good. So if you like your social deduction, if you like your horror, if you like to back Australian Kickstarters, check out Spirits of Carter Mansion by Keith Franks of Sydney and see what you think. Now, one more Australian Kickstarter. Not the last. Shot Glass Adventures. This is 10 adventures for D&D 5th edition. So it's a book of 10 fantasy adventures with DM and player maps, new monster and magic items, city and region settings, random tables, 10 adventure on a page one-shot adventures that include murder, dungeon crawls, heists, breakouts, sieges, and love stories, complete with extra maps. These adventures are fully play-tested for PCs of 1st to 5th level and are purposely designed for minimal preparation and flexible delivery. Each adventure can be run as a fill-in for 1 to 2 gaming sessions, with 3 to 4 hours a session, about average, or can all played as a mini-campaign, giving you over 50 hours of gaming content. This is another first-time creation by a guy called Stephen Thompson of Sydney, who's just put this together while he's studying his little communications degree, and it's already funded. He was only after $500. That's what we like to see, a nice little goal. He's already made over $3,000. Now, it only has about 6 days to go, so if you're listening to this podcast, as soon as it comes out, you still have time to jump on it. Again, it's a PDF through DriveThruRPG you can get for only $15 for a huge amount of content. Have I told you there's a few Australians with their first designs on Kickstarter?
Yeah.
Well,
one or two.
There's another one. Misdirection. This is a small box, fast-paced, pick-up-put-down card game of betrayal and survival by Games with Teeth, the designer Michael Langford of Melbourne. Now, this one only just launched. It's one of those quick campaigns, only like 28, 29 days to, in the whole campaign. It's already over 50% funded after like the first day and a half. And again, it only costs $22, including shipping. It's just a 54-card game. In Misdirection, 2 to 8 players are pitted against each other in a fight for survival with a global enemy in play. Players don't directly attack each other, but instead force other players to play cards they might not want to. You'll need to steal, sabotage, skip, and trick your opponent to get ahead. That's Misdirection. Check that one out on Kickstarter. And finally, for Australian content, this one's got a bit of a Tasmanian connection, actually.
Really?
Okay. Jabberwocky.
Ah, okay.
Art by our good friend Dice Lady Tanya Walker and Jelly Bean Games. This is, if you like, the sort of spiritual sequel to The Lady and the Tiger, where it's a collection of games for 1 to 7 players inspired by Lewis Carroll's classic poems. Very much similar style to Lady and the Tiger, where I feel like Lady and the Tiger started as one game and then other games got added on. This, I think, has been designed right from the start to be multiple games. So you've got a game that plays 1, a game that plays 2, a game that plays 7. It's got 16 days to go. It has already hit its funding goal. Look, the only thing, as we often see with Jelly Bean Games, it's $19 for the game, which is a lovely little card game. It's $15 shipping to Australian that... He's a little bit steep, so it ends up being almost, sorry, 19 US. So it ends up being almost 50 Australian dollars to get this game shipped. It's got lovely art by Tanya, although it must be said it's no Lady and the Tiger, which for me was an absolute work of art. But if you like these mini games and you're looking for lots of variety, I think quite a number of these games, well, at least a couple of these games are designed by Australian designers. They have a competition to get everyone to design them. So check that one out. That's Jabberwocky from Jellybean Games. Let's turn our attention to the wide world now in the little bit of time we've got left. If you don't get enough, if you can't get enough, if you haven't got enough in the world of Root, you can jump on the Underworld expansion by Leader Games. You can tunnel through the land, playing the great underground Dutchy faction. You can infiltrate the hands of your opponents with the Corvid Conspiracy. You've got 2 additional maps, so new and experienced players have never had so many ways to explore Root. This expansion has garnished them, garnered them, given them the garnish, over $1.5 million Australian dollars. It's still got 12 days to go, so you do have a little bit of time. It also adds an extra deck that you can use with the existing game to give you a huge amount of variety, the Exiles and Partisans decks. You've got resin clear markers. You've got the Vagabond pack, new little wooden meeples. It's not super cheap, $90 Australian, including shipping, but adds a huge amount of variety to the base game. We've been very excited, Garth, that Trent just picked up a copy of Root.
Yeah, well, I was just looking at this because, as you say, the Underworld expansion has garnered, garnished, and other G words, $1.5 million. The initial campaign for Root got $631,000.
Well, and I think part of the reason for that is it was a big success. So many people have heard about it. So many people have raved about it, this asymmetrical game, that they want to get on. And the great thing about this expansion is you can also back the base game and the other expansion there. So you can do all of that, and clearly a lot of people have. Let's keep moving along. Tsukuyomi Full Moon Down by Grey Fox Games. Look, to put it in a sentence, this is a game about killer robots, sad whales, and moon demons. And if that doesn't interest you, the designers are all out of ideas.
Sounds like you've read from the Kickstarter page.
That's right. Now, you may think, Tsukuyomi, I know that name. Well, that's right. This game has been released previously, but this is the U-Butte all-singing, all-dancing mini version. So previously it had standees. This is an upgrade kit if you've already got Tsukuyomi, or you get the full game with all the minis. A little bit pricey, $140 Australian dollars, but there's lots and lots of minis. It was funded after the first day. Still got 22 days to go. And again, if you like your asymmetrical games, here's another one.
And Grey Fox Games are making a habit of producing really good quality, really beautiful games.
Okay, couple more quick ones, super quick. Critical Core. This is the tabletop role-playing game that helps kids on the autism spectrum to build confidence and social skills one dragon at a time. By Game to Grow, a Seattle-based not-for-profit organization. Again, it's already funded. They've reached 150% of their funding goal. It's 96 Australian, including shipping. So it's basically a role-playing game, but that's sort of simplified, but not overly simplified. So it's been specifically targeted for kids, teens and adults. They're talking about 9+. That you can play with anyone, but they've specifically targeted at kids on the spectrum to help them build confidence and build communication skills. You can use it with D&D 5th edition because they have used the open source, but you can use it with other things. A couple more quick ones. Throw Throw Burrito. I don't want to talk about it too much. It's the follow-up to Exploding Kittens, if you like. Look, I just looked at it and it said, collect set of three cards the same, and then throw a foam burrito.
Well, look, if you thought Exploding Kittens was stupid and simplistic,
I think
this
there's less
seems
of a game
to be
than
take
this.
It to next level. Yeah. But
hey, it's got a foam burrito.
I feel really conflicted because it's made almost $2.4 million, but I reckon they'll be disappointed with that.
Well, I think
based
so too.
On what the Kickstarter for Exploding Kittens.
And if look, if you want to play a Mexican food game, check out Taco Fight, because this is a real-time cooperative food fight game by El Dorado Games that actually only takes 6 minutes to play. That one's got 17 days to go, and you fight against the tacos. That one sounds like a bit of fun, actually. And finally, Graphic Novel Adventures Season 2. So Van Ryder Games, who gave us the Graphic Novel Adventures, there's five more books. I know Leon got his. I know he was very excited. A couple of these are Sherlock Holmes ones, a couple of them about pirates, 120 Australian for the set of five. Leon was super impressed with the first series. He's backed these ones as well.
That's amazing. We've got to go, Mark. We've got to go. So this has been episode 254. Join and go and enter the BorderCon competition. We are out of here, but we will be back next week for 255 of the Dice Men Cometh. So thank you, Mark.
Have a great week.
Thank you, Garth.
Play lots of games.
We'll be back next week.
We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.